Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, hosted by David Robertson and myself, Christopher Cotter. This podcast is produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions, and you can visit our website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com.
We're speaking today with Lisbeth Mikkelsen, Professor in Religious Studies at the University of Bergen. She currently specialises in New Age, Norwegian Mission and Norwegian Pilgrimage Renaissance. But before that, she used to specialise in religion and gender, which is the topic we're going to be speaking on today. So, Professor Mikkelsen, welcome to the Religious Studies Project.
Thank you very much.
What do we mean when we're talking about gender? What is the concept of gender, and has it changed over time?
The main thing, I suppose, is that we are talking about how the ideas and the interpretations of males and females in society.
And has that concept always been a consistent concept, or has it changed over the years?
No, it has changed, of course. And in the later decades since the 1960s, feminism has, of course, influenced very much how we conceive of gender.
And is it a biologically constrained construct, or is it a social or cultural institution?
No, it's in the concept of gender, it means an emphasis on social and cultural dynamics and interpretations.
Okay. So what is the relevance of gender in religious studies for us today?
Oh, it's a very big topic. and I would say that it has a very big relevance to many fields of studies in religious studies, because most religions do make religious divisions between men and women, and have conceptions about sex and sex roles to a certain degree, and also that in religion you find gender on many levels. You find it on the mythical and symbolic levels, you find them on ritual levels, in social structural levels, in organizational levels. So there is no end of data and the types of research that can be made of gender in religious studies. And also, of course, religions are very important when it comes to how gender are perceived in society in general. They are very influential about the status and position of women and men in society in general. So it's in secularized societies like, let's say, Scandinavia, which is supposed to be the most secularized part of the world, the equality is a very highly valued ideal. It's politically it's a politically dominant ideal that we should work towards a society of gender equality. So secularization has meant that the grips of religion on gender has become more slack. And for instance, in the Norwegian state church now, you have many female ministers, and also some female bishops. While the first minister was really appointed as late as 1961, so there has been a very strong development in the later decades concerning this.
You mentioned equality before, and how in a secular state we value equality. So to what extent does that involve the social engagement of the scholar? Because certain of the issues involving gender quite controversial, you might say.
Mm.
So how involved is the scholar in what they are studying?
Yes, you indicate that scholars involved in gender studies are more involved than scholars in other fields of study. Mm. And I don't know whether that is true, actually. But it's of course an interesting question. And many of the scholars, for instance, in the social sciences, they have really been feminists who are wanting to make changes in society. In Norway, for instance, there have been very influential female sociologists who have also been feminists, and they have influenced state politics in this area. So, of course, you. But then you can look upon that also, that you have to be inspired and think that something is important to make good research as well. If you don't really care about what you're doing, then how can that create good research? So I'll put the question back to you.
Okay, then. So beyond the level of general interest in what you're engaging with,
mm-hmm.
I guess I'm asking about the formative role of the scholar. How much is the scholar trying to change religion through gender studies?
I think perhaps that's been more important for feminist scholars in theology and Christianity than in the history of religion, I think, because they are closer to the religion in question. An historian of religion is generally not so engaged in religious activities. Very often that's the question. They are more distanced. But some of the feminist scholars have been very influential and very keen on changing the church. You have some very important examples, like, for instance, Mary Daly, like Rosemary Radford Ruther, Elizabeth Schüssler Fierenza. All these are feminist scholars with a feminist agenda relating to the churches. But that doesn't mean that these are bad scholars. I don't think so.
So where would you fall on that line? Would you prefer to be more the historian, or would you side with the feminists on this aspect?
I sympathize with the feminist agenda, but in my own research, I haven't had the very feminist agenda, a political agenda, but I must say I have perhaps a feminist theoretical agenda. It has been important for me to understand what the gender ideology, gender models, gender thinking, what that really means in religion. So I will say I have been driven by that kind of values more than making a change in society. But of course, some of what you do have some influence. I have, for instance, been seeing female Norwegian missionaries as representatives of a certain kind of feminism. And that is, for some of them, that has been a liberating idea, because they belong to a rather conservative section of Norwegian Christianity, but they have been working for liberation of women in other parts of the world, and they have seen themselves as subjects able to make changes in other parts of the world. You can have many opinions about foreign mission, but at least it's interesting from the perspective of feminist solidarity and the self-perceptions of Christian women, I think.
Could you explain a bit more about your own feminist theoretical background and how that has played out in practice through your work? Would you say that makes it a very different kind of study to when I study it as a man, as a phenomenologist, when I perform a study on a phenomena or a different group or gender, would you say your feminist perspective comes out with a very different kind of result?
I'm not sure about that. I'm skeptical towards saying that a man has... I have, for instance, supervised male scholars who have been studying gender in Norwegian religion. And I think that generally, also feminists, they have to use methods and theories, and their scholarly reputation will always depend on how they use methods and theory, and if that is convincing to both male and female scholars. Not all female scholars either are feminist scholars, so. Personally, I have been quite inspired by a model of studies that comes from Joan Scott. She's a very well-known American historian, and she has a research model that's, I think, it has been very fertile when you used about the religion. And that is that she looks for myths on the different levels of gender structures. You have the mythical and symbolic level, you have the conceptual level, and you have the organizational level, and then you have the identity level. And all these levels, they are influencing each other. There are different processes going in different directions, and I think that's a very good model to use in religious studies as well. And of course, that's a model that appeals as much to male scholars as to women scholars.
Could you give an example of this mythic understanding of the gender role?
If you think of the creation myth in the Bible, that has been a very influential story. Perhaps it's the most influential stories for women in the world, as far as... because it has some rather clear conceptions about the male and female, the Adam and Eve, where Adam is the primary creature, Eve is created from his body. He gives name, he's naming the world, he's naming the woman, who is quite a passive consort in this story. The only thing she's active when she's becoming tempted by the snake and then tempts Adam to take the fruit, the forbidden fruit, and eat. And this story with the hierarchical gender structure between male and female, and also the greater sinfulness of women, also depicted as a temptress, that has been fatal. And it's been enormously influencing in Christianity. I think it's more influential in Christianity than in the Jewish religion, because of in Christianity you have this the dominance of the idea of sin related to the idea of salvation. Those ideas are not equally important in Judaism. And which makes women very visible, very prominent when it comes to sinfulness, temptation, moral weakness. All those aspects, those lack of values, have been more related to women than to men. And also you have this the hierarchy of the male in this, And this kind of gender structure has functioned almost as what Bourdieu would call a habitus in Norwegian society, or in, not Norwegian, but in Western religion, that male are created to be the first, the uppermost, women the second, and that that women are weak, are the weaker sex. And I mean, if you don't think that model is very important, you
well, yes, clearly. Speaking personally, as someone living in the secular age, I don't think that model. So it then becomes an interesting question of how it is that I no longer think in terms of that. And I'm assuming you'd probably relate feminism as a critique of the Adam story, particularly in terms of feminist theology.
But it's still very important in large parts of Christianity. And Christianity is still by far the most influential and biggest religion in the Western world. And it's spreading in Africa and Latin America, many other places. So if what are central conceptions in that religion, you cannot just say they are not so influential anymore, I think. They are important ideas and structures here. And these are structures, as I said, you can see this. I mean, the Bible story is a myth with some symbols, but it's also conceptualized as, for instance, hereditary sin, as Augustine did. And also you have the organizational model where the myth is reflected in, for instance, not allowing women to become clergy. And then the identity model, where women are taught to look upon themselves as the subordinate sex, that's the natural, the divine role for women, and males are also in a similar way taught to conceive themselves as the dominant sex.
So with the emergence of more female clergy since the 1960s, especially in Norway, are we looking at a reinterpretation of these strong mythic stories, or are these stories being abandoned in a sense?
I think they are looked at more as myths, not as true revelation, but as myths, that stories that you cannot take really seriously any longer. But still there are conservative circles. Let's look at the Catholic Church, for instance. You don't have any female clergy there yet. So there's a long way to go to the sort of feminist critique is accepted in the big Christian denominations.
Nalin, you just used the word myth, and I was just wondering, because you made the distinction there with true stories, so is that from the standpoint of the believers that these are myths, and a myth is therefore not a true story, or is this the scholarly way of looking at things?
This is a scholarly way of looking at it, of course.
So does that now imply that scholars have an implicit unbelief structure in their own studies of religion?
Oh yes, don't you think so? That scholars are informed by theories and concepts taken, for instance, from other disciplines. And gender, of course, is not a concept that historians or religious scholars have conceived. We have taken it from mainly the social scientists, I think, from the sociologist and the social anthropologist, and their type of analysis. We haven't, so yes.
Following on from that then, would you say in the present climate, with gender and religion, which is the more important topic? Are we talking about gender, to which religion is an aspect, or are we talking about religion, to which gender is an aspect? Which would you give primacy to? Gender or religion?
Uh, I cannot answer that for any other than myself. And I'm really more interested in religion, and I'm working with many other topics than gender. So of course, as religious scholars, religion is our primary topic. But then I think that gender is an important topic in studies of religion. But it's sort of disappointing, I think, that male scholars have not been more interested in this topic, because it's as relevant to them as it is to female scholars. So there are some male scholars who have worked on gender in religion, and I think perhaps it's a little surprising that not more male scholars have been interested in this. For instance, now I think most men in Norway they believe in equality of the sexes, but then they, as religious scholars, they are not very interested in this topic.
Do you think there's a particular reason behind that? Is that tying us back to the whole dominance of Christianity, particularly in the Western framework? And therefore men already operate a position of superiority, or at least they feel they do, and therefore don't see the need to study it? Or are there other reasons why you think men just haven't become involved in it?
I think there must be several reasons. But gender studies have not had a high prestige in religious studies. It has not. And it has been looked upon as a political type of study that you really cannot rely on, and that of course also makes it more difficult perhaps to specialize in gender studies on that, and also it has been conceived as something that interests in females or women more than men. So it's their department in a way in religious studies, but I think really that gender studies will profit enormously if more men would engage in it.
Is there a way you think you could get men to engage in it? I mean, are we looking at general, like, is religious studies bound by its own myths and conceptions whereby these are the topics that we are allowed to study and we should not be studying gender?
To a certain extent, I think male scholars, and they are dominating the discipline, as you know.
Mm.
So, and I know personally that male scholars of the older generation can have warned against people who are wanting to study gender in some shape or other. So I mean, you have to be quite interested in this topic to choose that, because it's more controversial than most topics in religious studies, I think.
Well, that was Jonathan speaking to Elizabeth Mickelson in Edinburgh on the 29th of March this year. And I hope you enjoyed Jonathan's inaugural interview for the Religious Studies Project, as he's been doing quite a few, and there's going to be a few more from him in the coming months. And we hope to have some more news about reporters in the not-too-distant future. We've just come back from the Religion and Society Sacred Practices of Everyday Life conference, which was held in Edinburgh last week. And Jonathan and Chris and I managed to record 6 interviews while we were there. So we'd like to express our gratitude to Linda Woodhead and all of the team at the Religion Society programme for allowing us to make such extensive use of their conference. And as always, if you have any comments to make about the interview or indeed the interviewers, please do leave a message on the website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com, on our Facebook page, and please do leave a rating on our iTunes page. That would help us enormously. Next week, I'll be talking to Tariq Madoud about the crisis of secularism in Europe, an interview recorded at this year's Socrel conference. And as always, thanks for listening.